I'd like to first say I thank the Lord for his, I should have said this at prayer request time, but I thank the Lord for blessing my knee Monday. I came over and we were going to reattach some shingles that had blown off of the roof at the chapel. And while Rodney was here to help me, and while we were unloading and things and getting our all of our stuff ready to get up on the roof, it didn't take us long to do the job. Anyway, one of the things was I stepped out of the trailer with my ladder, and I should have done it differently. I should have set the ladder down and got out of the trailer and then reached over and got the ladder and lifted it out, but that's not what I did. I just stepped out with the ladder in my hands, and my weight plus the weight of the ladder, and probably I didn't have my foot positioned right, I twisted my knee really bad. And anyway, I'm just thankful. I was hurting really bad Tuesday and even Wednesday up during the getting going in the Wednesday morning, I was hurting. But last night and today, and yesterday I done reasonably well. I'm just real thankful for the touch that I have. The Lord has helped my knee to feel much better. I appreciate that. So I'd like to address something. We call this thought today the mother premise. We use this word premise multiple times for different things. And premise is a foundational idea or thought that we base other conclusions on. So if we take a premise and we get it wrong, we'll come up with wrong conclusions. And if we get the right premise, then there's a considerable amount of safety in that. We understand the premise that God is holy, completely holy, and there's nothing unholy about him, then it helps us make all of our other conclusions from the correct perspective. It's difficult to come from a bad environment and have a good perspective. Not saying it's impossible, it's just difficult. So when we get the premise right, then everything else more easily falls into place. So this may not be what you thought about for a Mother's Day message, but I want you to know that I sincerely appreciate the mothers in this congregation and those that have been mothers to many that even if they didn't have children of their own. You know, that's the point. A mother premise, when we got it right, then you're going to see evidences of it whether you have biological children or not. But if you got it wrong, you're going to see chaos even if you have biological children. So the foundational premise of a mother is under attack. I don't think you need to say amen. I'm just stating that because I believe we all recognize that in our world today. And it's not just through divorce or abandonment or those kind of things. That used to be something that was like high on our list, on the radar of the reason that mothers aren't maybe what they should have been or something like that. But there is something deeper that's happening in our world today. It's a very core element of being a mother, it has become a matter of personal definition. I want y'all to think about that. This message is very foundational. It is not something that you, I don't know, hopefully it makes sense to everybody. But it's something I feel a great burden for, because I'm 100% convinced if we get the premise wrong, then we're going to make choices and decisions down through life that's going to constantly lead us further and further from the truth and from the right premise. And that's what's been happening in our world today. A past generation only needed a little encouragement to be a mother. And today's generation has lost the blueprint. They don't even know where to start. They're clueless. They really are. Have you ever taught somebody how to drive a manual transmission vehicle? You remember when you learned? It's been so long ago. Actually, I learned it a long time before I was a legal driver, because I learned to maneuver the shifter and the clutch and all of that on things like lawnmowers and machinery and tractors and all of that kind of stuff as a very young boy, before I had two digits in my age. And as I got older, it was just a natural thing. And you know, today, they even make jokes about you don't need a security device if you got a stick shift truck or car. Nobody's going to steal it because they don't know how to drive it. And why is that? It's because the premise was lost. They don't know. And there's a premise about being a mother that's been lost in our generation. So, in Genesis, the third chapter, in the 20th verse, you might have guessed that I might start over in the first of the book with a message that I said was foundational. So, in Genesis, the third chapter, in the 20th verse, it says, "And Adam called his wife's name Eve, because she was the mother of all living." So, we have names that mean something. My last name is Adams, which is a plural form of Adam. And Adam in the Bible, I guess the Hebrew word means like red earth or red dirt. It means that God made man from the first man from the dust, from the earth. Adam, you know, we can make reference to mankind and say Adam, and we all know what we're talking about, right? So if you, whatever our last name is, not always, but a lot of times, I think of Brother Paul's last name, Hightower. Now, I don't know. Maybe he can tell us, fill us in sometime. I don't know where the name come from, but it probably didn't come from a hole in the ground. All right? Hightower. I'm guessing that either there was some really, really tall people in his background. There was something there that they called him Hightower, right? I don't know. And so names have meant something, been connected. Adam called Eve, called his wife's name Eve, because he says she's the mother of all living. So that name has an association with being a mother today. Okay? So it's very fundamental. Notice also in Genesis, the first chapter, in the 27th and the 28th verse, it says, "So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him," or mankind. "Male and female created he them. God blessed them, and God said unto them, Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth." So one of the things that he prescribed is that mankind would have children. And we know, if you got the premise right, we know that mothers are the ones that bring the children into the world. Now you think, I'm getting too basic here, but I just want you to realize how off-center our culture is today. Unfortunately, I have listened to an educated person. They actually had doctor associated with their name, state that they were giving testimony in to a committee in our Senate or House of Representatives. It was in the Senate, in Congress. They were given a testimony, and they said, "I'm an expert, and I'm here to tell you," this is what this person said, "that a father can deliver a child." Now, I'm not talking about be there and assist with the delivery. They said, "I'm an expert, and a father can bear a child." This was a person that could have signed their name. I don't know what their name was, but they could have signed their name and put PhD after it. They had a lot of college, and they were being called in as an expert witness or something. I don't know. I don't really know. And I don't want to get too far off into politics, but you know, there's a senator from Louisiana that is pretty country. And that was her answer to Mr. Kennedy. And he was flabbergasted. And I'm flabbergasted. Why would somebody say something like that? It's because the premise is lost. They lost the blueprint. If they've ever read these verses in the Bible, they don't accept them. They've thrown them out. This is how far our world is out of balance. When mankind refuses to follow God's laws, premises are lost. And you just keep denying God generation after generation after generation, and you'll get what we got in our world today. You'll get people that are educated by today's standards that'll tell you something that's not biologically possible. All right? So I'd like to move on from that point. Being a mother is such an incredibly valuable thing in our world. I credit some very intricate things of my development to my mother. It's because she was there to consistently reinforce me and to guide me day in, day out. And I am calling her blessed today because of that. I used to say that my dad disciplined me for not moving fast enough or not working like I should, and my mother disciplined me for not being particular enough. And it was really a pretty good combination because my mother's standard of whether or not a job was finished was considerably higher than my dad's. My dad was more apt to say, nail it, we're not building pianos. And my mother would say, there's a little speck of something there. So she would discipline me if I left it there. And it was her guidance and her ability to find things that I thought was completely lost. She taught me how to find things that in any other situation, I would have thought that it was gone forever. I used it yesterday. I was working on this lawnmower, and I know some of you know what I'm talking about, but they had on this, there was these little tiny linkages that went to the carburetor, the choke, and I took this off, and I knew better, but this little linkage that was supposed to be hooked up, I turned it around because I was working on it, and the linkage fell off. And I didn't realize it till I was putting it back together. And when I was putting it back together, it's like, oh, where did my linkage go? I'd been spraying on it and cleaning on it and all of this. And it's like, where is this at? And I had to go back and think, how would my mother address this? Stop. Where are you at? Where have you been? That's one of the things that she would do to me. When I would come into the house sometimes and say, Mom, I've lost something. Can you help me find it? And one of the things she would do is she's come out there and she says, well, tell me where all you've been. And she would cause me to stop and think about where I had went. So I used that yesterday. It's like, okay, I've been right here within like a 10-foot diameter circle. It has to be here somewheres. It just wasn't the best place to drop something like that. So I got down on my hands and knees and I was padded through some leaves and scratched around here and there. And I was looking and I was just carefully scanning the ground on my hands and knees. And what do you know? There it was. I found it. But it's something that my dad probably would have been making one out of baling wire. And my mom said, it's got to be here somewheres. We can find it. So that's the type of things that mothers can do. You may not be in detail. If you're a mother today, you may not be as detail oriented as my mother was. But she was very detail oriented. Mothers. Valuable part of our life. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 6. And I notice a few verses here. I want to encourage us to always remember to do the right things for the right reason, and don't get tired of doing the right things for the right reason. Notice in verse 5, chapter 6, it says, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy might. And these words which I have commanded thee this day shall be in thine heart. Thou shalt teach them diligently. You know, when you've told your child 6 times what your expectation is, and they still done the wrong thing, you know what that means? You need to tell them 7 times. And if you told them 17 times and they still ain't got it, you know what that means? You need to tell them 18 times. That's what it means when it says, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children. And thou shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. One of the most valuable things that you can give to your home is consistency. And in consistency being consistent with how you answer, with the style and the type of answer, and to continually point them to a better place in their attitudes, in their behavior, and a higher place in your expectations of them. He says, and thou shalt bind them as a sign upon thy hand, and thou shalt be as frontlets between thine eyes, and thou shalt write them upon thine house and on thy gates. I've used these verses many times talking to men about what they should do as fathers, and I believe it's very applicable here. But it's very applicable to mothers too, because a home should consist of a mother and a father. And the mother is, by design, is going to be more of the nurturing kind. The mother is the one that creates an atmosphere. Especially when the weather's nice, I always have something that I can do outside of the house till at least dark. And there's times I make exceptions to that. But so the atmosphere in the house is a mother's atmosphere. Be consistent. Have them, it says here, to the things that the direction that you want the children to go, have them on your person. Wear the characteristics that you want your children to have. You want your children to be peaceable, to be kind, to be gentle, to be compassionate. Then wear that on you. It says, bind them on your hands. And thou shalt be frontless between thine eyes. I don't know exactly what he's talking about when he says a frontlet, but I believe he's talking about something that is visible to the person that's giving the direction. A frontlet is, well, if you're going to aim a rifle, there's a sight on the front of the barrel and there's something at the back of the barrel. And that sight out on the front needs to be lined up with the target. Let it be a frontlet to you. The characteristics that you want to instill, this is a premise that mothers ought to be coached in, that ought to be taught, that ought to be encouraged, that ought to be, they ought to be, you might say, blessed for. He goes on to say, thou shalt not only bind them on your hands, but thou shalt write them upon the post of thy house and on thy gates. Maybe literally. You want to hang up a sign that says, something about living peaceably with all men. A scripture that has that in it. Put it on your wall somewheres. It gives a lot different atmosphere to the home than having a plaque on the wall that says, sit down, shut up, and hang on, right? And you can buy one of those signs too if you want it, but I'm thinking about the type of things you put on the wall. And it says, thou shalt write them upon the post of thy house and on thy gates. So what is it? There's this atmosphere that a mother has complete control over. You know, if my wife wants pink curtains, she's going to get pink curtains. I've used purple towels for a long time. Purple's not my favorite color, but it's her favorite color. And it's an atmosphere, it's a characteristic. If you know my wife very well, you know that she likes purple. It's okay. And I'm just glad we got towels. I'd use green towels. I'd use brown towels. And I'll use purple towels. I'd use pink towels too. I'm just glad for a towel. And if she just changes her mind and she wants green ones, then we'll have green ones in the house. But that's part of her, that's her environment. That's something she's creating. And that's something that a mother should be cognizant of what they're, what they're creating. I've thought, especially in thinking about this message, I've thought, I wonder what it'd be like, what I would have done if I'd had four girls instead of four boys. Because it's been real easy for me to think of my direction that I want to channel four sons in my house. It's been so, it's been a natural thing for me. And if I'd had four daughters in my house, I'm going to tell you, I would, the challenge my wife has had with four sons, I would have had that with four daughters. All right? Because children, when they're little, they think their parents hung the moon. And it would be real easy for me to go down the path of teaching them about carburetors and wheel bearings and grease and all of this kind of stuff. It'd been easy for me to do that. But I'm going to tell you, I think that would have been a mistake. It's not that I wouldn't have wanted to teach my daughter, if I had one, how to change her own tire. At least know if somebody else is doing it wrong. I'd like for my daughter to know how to put gas in the car and how to check the oil. Wouldn't necessarily want her to know how to change the oil, okay? She's going to learn something because of my trade. But I would have to check my desire to teach children because if I had four daughters, you know, I want them to grow up to be four mothers. I don't want them to grow up to be confused like everybody else is in this world. I want them to be real mothers. Sister Maxine, three daughters. All she had was granddaughters. She didn't get a grand, she never got a boy in her household until she had great grandchildren. Now, that would have been different. I don't want to teach them, as a father, I don't want to teach daughters how, I don't want them to be compromised in their role as a future mother. I want my wife to be able to teach them with the environment she creates and her knowledge. I want her to be able to teach them what it's like to be a mother, a real mother. Our world has abandoned any and all reservations along these lines. They tell us from the time that our children first go to school until they enter the workforce, you can do anything that a man can do. And you know what we've got? Now we've got people that don't know what they are. They've allowed curiosity instead of propriety to be the rule for instruction. You ever thought about that? There's been things that I was curious about, and I remember, I don't remember the details, but there was a young girl that was in, ended up in concentration camp. Some of y'all might help me with this story, that went to, her dad was a watchmaker, and he had went and bought a bunch of watches, and on the way back on the train, she asked him a question, and he said something to the effect, I can't explain that to you right now. But she had a curiosity. Anybody help me with, I'm losing. All right, it's Corey Ten Boom. Her father was a watchmaker, and he had bought a bunch of watches, and they were in his, whatever his bag was that he carried on the train. And it was heavy, especially for a little girl. And when she asked him this question, he set the bag down and he asked her, "Can you pick up and carry this bag?" And of course she couldn't. She couldn't have carried it off the train. And he said, there's things out there that are too heavy for a young child. So the questions, the curiosity, I loved when my children were curious about what I was doing. And this is where it would have been so hard if I was laying under the sink and fixing a faucet or whatever. It'd been real hard for me to not invite my little daughter, if I'd had one, to crawl under there with me and do what Daddy was doing. I'm not saying she couldn't learn some of that, but there is a place where propriety should take precedence over curiosity. Because remember, we're talking about premises here, a foundational premise. In Titus, in the New Testament, in Titus chapter 2, I'd like to turn there. It says, in verse 1, it says, "Speak the things which become sound doctrine, that the aged men be sober, grave, temperate, sound in faith, in charity and patience." I don't have a problem with any of that. Not that I don't have areas I need to work on, but I think it's sound advice, okay? Verse 3, "The aged women likewise, that they should be in behavior as becometh holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things." I want to encourage you today, if you're a woman, to be a teacher of good things. Those of you that are young mothers, teach the ones around you, your children. There's coming a day that you may be teaching other young mothers. If you're an older mother or an older woman, I want to encourage you to be a teacher of good things. "Aged women likewise, they be in behavior of holiness, not of false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things." And then he goes into some details that I think is part of the good things. He says that they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children. Now there was a time in our society in the United States that to say that would be like, duh. They already know that. But not now they don't. They don't know that now. Because you remember what I said when we got started? They've lost the blueprint. They don't know that they're supposed to love their husbands. They don't know that they're supposed to love their children. They don't know how to love their husband. They don't know how to love their children. And I think it's deeper than the current teenage generation. I want y'all to think about that. I think it goes beyond the current teenage generation, whatever generation that gets labeled as. I think that there's young adults today. They're in the right age bracket to be mothers and fathers. And they don't know this premise either. And they need to know how to love their children and how to love their husbands. They not just set a precedence or set an objective, but they need to know how to do that. How to encourage, how to give instruction, and how to give some guidance. Remember the house. That's your kingdom. That's your environment. That's what you have. I don't know many men that are really particular about what color towels they have. And I might have a few opinions about what kind of food we eat. I'm just glad for food, and I'm glad for towels. I'm glad for clean clothes, and I wouldn't have bought this shirt. I'm just being honest with you. But she did, and she thinks it looks good on me. So I don't care what you think. But I'm going to tell you that if it was left up to me, this one would still be hanging in the store somewheres. I would have picked something different. It's part of an environment. It's part of her kingdom. Do you see? I don't know. Lord, help us not to be over stretch our bounds here today. But in verse 5 it says to be discreet. I still believe this is talking about teaching good things. It says to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home. Boy, that one's out the window. Good, obedient to their own husbands. Boy, you got to be careful how you handle that one. That the word of God be not blasphemed. There's some premises here. There's some things here that if you don't have the premise right of who God is and that God is a father that loves us, you're never going to get to the mother premise. But if you can get to the mother premise and then you begin to learn that these are things that ought to be taught, those of you that are empty nesters, got a big tall challenge for you. You need to teach them. Teach the younger ones how to do these things. Not just say, crack the whip and you got to, but teach them how. Teach them how to do it in a manner that is satisfying, that's fulfilling, that gives purpose, that gives cause. Because if we don't, all we got to do is open the door and look at what happens. If we don't, and incrementally, precept upon precept, you know, precepts is what makes a premise. They work together. And if we lose the precept upon precept, the premise is going to go out the window to where somebody will stand and say, I'm the expert, and I'm telling you that a father can have a child. It's like, oh, that makes my head hurt. Because what you just said, impossible. I can tell you later what they meant, but not from this platform. I want us to notice a couple points. When these elements are missing in society, it ultimately causes confusion and dysphoria. And we got it all around us today. Not this past time, but the time before, I believe, that Anita and I was in Austria and Germany. And I got to be careful because I found out they listen once in a while. So, they listened when I said something about being lukewarm drinking water. So they called my hand on that when I was over there this last time. But when we were there, not this last time, time before, a couple years ago, there was two little girls that made a big impression on me. In fact, it's something that replays ever so often in my mind. We got two little girls that was at the meeting. What does children need when you take them somewhere? They need a few toys, don't they? They had these little toy baby strollers. Both of them had one. And they both had a baby doll. And they both had a little blanket. And I don't remember all the other things that they had, but these little girls were somewhere in the 4 to 6 age bracket. And I never saw them carrying their little doll around by the hair or dragging it by a leg. I never saw that. They picked this baby doll up that was not alive, okay? They picked it up like they were afraid they were going to wake it up. And they carried it so carefully, and they would hold it in the and put their little blanket over it, and they took care of this little baby doll like I've never seen children do before. Maybe they do, but it was not as distinct as this time. And then they would sit over there and they would rock their little baby, and then they would pretend it went to sleep, and they'd put it back in the stroller, and they'd get up and carefully put it down in the stroller. I never could I have done that. I couldn't even do it in real life and keep them asleep. They'd cover them up so, and I came away thinking, you know, they've been watching somebody. They've been learning something. They'd been taught how to hold a baby. They'd been taught, and they were studiously imitating, I believe, their mothers or maybe someone else that they had observed. And they were taking it serious. You know, I wish that somehow we could impart to our young ladies how serious it is to prepare to be a mother. Somebody over there was doing their job. I noticed this year, one of those little girls' brothers were there. Two of them. They're older than the little girl, and they weren't playing with dolls. They had an RC car that they were running around on the pavement. Very appropriate. Very typical. It's expectation-wise. I want us to go to John, the second chapter, and I want to notice a verse here. I'm going to read 5 verses, but I want us to notice a verse. I've never quite thought of it like this before until in preparing for today, this thought came to my mind, and I was just, I just was struck with the wisdom that this is, because children aren't always under your feet. They come a time that they start looking at you in the eye. And if you're a mother of young men, there's going to be one of those days that you're going to feel like they could pick you up and carry you off. It's going to happen. So in the second chapter of John, we have a story here about the marriage in Cana. Y'all all know that story, so I'll read a few verses here. In first verse says, "In the third day there was a marriage in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. And both Jesus was called and his disciples to the marriage. And when they wanted wine, the mother of Jesus said unto him, They have no wine." So it's a common belief that by the time Jesus entered his ministry, that Joseph was gone, that he had passed away. I don't know that we have a verse in the Bible that tells us that, but that's the common belief anyway, that Joseph wasn't there. So at this point, Mary would have been a widow. I don't know exactly how many children she had, but it seemed like that she had several children, boys and girls. And so Jesus and his disciples, that tells me his ministry was on the verge of beginning, if it wasn't. And Jesus and his disciples were invited to come to the wedding. And when they run out of the wine, the fresh squeezed grape juice, I believe is what that was. Wasn't that it was distilled wine like we would think of today. The mother of Jesus said unto him, or unto Jesus, they have no wine. Jesus said unto her, woman, what have I to do with thee? Mine hour is not yet come. It's like, mom, what are you trying to say here? I want you to really think about this next verse. His mother saith unto the servants, whatsoever he saith unto you, do it. And how much more did she say about it? She didn't say nothing after that. She said to the people that were in charge, she said, whatever he says, just do it. And I believe she turned and walked away. That's what I think she did. What did she just do? What's that? She empowered him. She told everybody in that room that was listening to her, I got confidence in him. That's what she said. I got confidence in my son. And did she know how he was going to do it? She didn't. I don't think that she even was trying to force him to do something miraculous. She just believed that he was resourceful enough. She believed in him. She had confidence in him. And she also delegated a responsibility to him and said, here you go. You can do it. You know, one of the most valuable things that you can do to your children, boys and girls, is be able to come to the place that you can say, they need some help over there. Go help them. Or take them over there and introduce them. This is my son. This is my daughter. I believe they can be of help to you. And then leave. Don't stick around and say, be careful. Look out. There's cars coming. Just leave. I believe that Mary did something that was incredible right there. Her words were simple. They were to the point. They expressed confidence and they assigned a task. And when she did that, she didn't micromanage him. She only connected him with a responsibility, and she stepped away. This is part of the premise of being a mother. You know, sometimes we use this word of mothering. Well, make sure you got the right age bracket for mothering. If we're mothering a three-year-old on picking up Legos, that's one thing. But if we're mothering a 13-year-old and picking up Legos, it should be, there's got to be some difference there. A 13-year-old, you can say, Legos. They don't belong on the floor in the middle of the night. Pick them up. There's a box. There's the Legos. Don't come out of the room until they're done. All right? You set an expectation. It was simple. It was direct. And you handed a responsibility off. This is a premise that we got to get right. If you got to stay in there and say, oh, you missed an orange one. You missed a green one. You missed a clear one. Somewhere we've got to transition. The premise of a mother. I'd like to end with, thank you for your time this morning. The verse, I'm not going to read it all, but we could go to Proverbs, the 31st chapter, and read from the 10th verse on down. I'm not going to read it. It's talking about the virtuous woman who can find. But it was read, this passage of Scripture, verses 10 down through the end of the chapter, was read recently at the funeral of Sister Vicky. She had no biological children, but I thought it was so appropriate. Sister Vicky was a mother to so many down through time. She was one that did almost everything in the book here. And to be a mother is more than a career. It's more than a career in two ways. But I'd like to read the last verse. Not the last verse, the 28th verse. It says, her children arise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praiseth her. I want to encourage mothers today to be a mother, to set the record straight, to be a mother that others can look on and say, that's a real mother. That's someone that was a mother to me when I was small. You know, I'll tell you a little something about my mother. She made some vivid stamps in my memory. Her attention to detail. It was hard for me to stay focused long enough to clean my room and to clean out the car like she wanted me to do. I'm telling you, it was tough on me. And there came a time when I met Anita that I wrote my mother a letter. My wife thought I was not being very nice. But I told my mother in that letter that this woman was more important to me now than her. And my mother didn't come to me with tears in her eyes. She didn't come to me crying and feeling rejected. But she accepted that. I felt her approval. I felt her challenge me many times in my adult life. And I want to challenge mothers today to be the kind of mother that the age dictates for your children. To be the type of mother that is necessary for the age that we live in. And I'm going to say it again. Oh, if I could only see older women teaching the younger ones how to be a mother. How to fill the role that God has designed. And we can take everything that we've said this morning and apply it to the church. The church is a spiritual mother. But the mother is more, to be a mother is more than a career in two ways. One, it's more important than a career. And another is, it's more than going through the emotions. You know what I'm saying? It's more than bringing children into the world. Your job is just getting started then. You're getting your feet wet when you bring them into this world. And I don't want to get off on another subject. I want to conclude. But I want you to feel the support of your husband, of the father, that you can do what you need to do. And I know that there's women that have no children of their own, and yet because they want to be a blessing to children and young people and other family members, their husband has supported them. They've helped them. They've got in on the bandwagon, you might say. I believe that happened in Sister Vicky's case. It's happening in other cases that I know of. to be a mother. It's a call. It's a calling. It's something that's so necessary in our world. And I was so flabbergasted to hear somebody that's supposed to be so educated, and yet their response was so wrong. It not only was it corrupt, it was just, how can you say that? Say something like that in good faith, with a straight face. I would have to maybe have said, if I was there, you're kidding, right? But they were serious. Lord, help us today to have the right premise of what it means to be a mother. You pray for me.